Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. And today I am doing a show to follow up about the discussion I had on New Year's Day with Joe Sullivan. My guests today will be Bob Fort and Joe Sullivan. And Bob, why don't we start and share your thoughts?
I was very interested to hear Joe's comments about the proposed rebuilding of Albany High School. This is a huge issue. I live in Albany. I don't own property at this point, but I rent in three places, and my wife operates a small business. This is a huge proposal. And of course, it failed in its first vote, and now it's back February 9th. And I hope voters in Albany are paying attention to this. They scaled down the proposal, really, just in very minor ways. Some of it sounds dramatic. They were going to replace the auditorium. Now they're going to just maybe add a few seats. They only shaved $8 million off of the $196 million original proposal. And it strikes me that a lot of what is in here is really routine maintenance that just should simply be part of normal school finance. So I'm opposed to this. I'm strongly opposed to it, and I think the school taxes in Albany are already way too high. And it's a school district that has a history of not achieving results. As you know, Cynthia, I was a senior editor at the Times Union from 2005 through for 8 years, and year after year, the Albany High School only achieves a graduation rate that hovers around 50%. 1 year, about 5 or 6 years ago, it actually dropped below 50%. We're talking about a high school that can't graduate almost a majority of the students. And that's the problem. We now see a system that is in the state's receivership program. Hackett Middle School, defined as a persistently struggling school, is a year away if it doesn't make progress in the test results, the academic performance, from having an independent monitor brought in to just run the place. That person would have the power to fire people, move people around. Albany High is 2 years away from that point. I've been looking at what they're doing. I've read their plan submitted to the state. And frankly, it's not very impressive to me. I'm no expert on education, and a lot of the jargon is difficult to interpret. But in their very first quarterly report, I'm seeing a lot of red when they are asked to report the metrics, the actual English language arts and math test results for their students. So I don't think this is a time in Albany for the taxpayers to be spending $180 million on such a rather lavish rebuilding of the high school.
Joe?
I agree wholeheartedly with Bob, because picking up on his point about the 50% or less graduation rate, I looked at the demographic numbers for the high school enrollment, and it reached a peak around 2004, and it's declined steadily since. There are about 2,200 students as of the 2014 count, in the high school, grades 9 through 12. So it seems like with a 50% dropout rate, you're probably talking a little more than 1,000 students. So it seems totally fiscally irresponsible to engage in this bond act for $170 million in round figures. And we know it's going to be higher than that because of cost overruns. But it's ridiculous when you're dealing with maybe not more than 1,000 students. You've got two charter schools that have recently closed. Why doesn't the district either rent or buy those buildings? They're new buildings. You have McGinn High School,
yes,
which
yes.
recently closed. Why not use or rent or buy that building? So there are other alternatives here. And I also think that it's foolhardy to shift the Abrucan, shop classes and so forth from its present location about three blocks away from the school. It should stay where it's at.
It always bothers me when I read my newspaper and I see the sort of tax impact that is reported. It's very understated.
And, oh, yes.
Only $19 a year. That's on a home value of $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
I went on the web and I started just perusing through school tax bills in Albany.
Mm-hmm.
And a typical homeowner is easily paying at least a few thousand dollars a year, and it's not unusual to see single-family homes hit with a $12,000, even a $20,000 a year school tax bill. Now, that's, there's the city and county tax that comes later, which is a fourth to a third of that same amount. So how anyone can, especially someone who's retired on a fixed income, can deal with that kind of tax burden is amazing to me. And that's one of the reasons so many people are living. Albany has one of the highest school tax rates in the state of New York. There are others that are higher, but we are up there.
That's a very good point, Bob, because all these numbers are really funny numbers. They're fudged. And
yes.
In this case, you're talking about a plan that where they would have a construction timeline of about 6 years. So when they're giving you that increase, that's going to be coming back again and again and again for 6 years on top of whatever other increases they might have in school budgets. So the number, and also the city is in the process of reassessing the homes and
yes.
also rezoning the homes. And this is mostly going to impact the area of the city that pays the lion's share of the taxes. That's uptown Albany. 70,
yes.
maybe 80% of the student body comes from homes that don't pay property taxes. And only about a third of the homes or the housing in Albany is owner-occupied. And so the people that are really hurt by this are the people that live in the nice neighborhoods of uptown Albany. And if this goes through, they're going to be driven out. This will be the final straw, and these people will leave. And then who's going to pay the taxes?
Yeah, it really, in many communities in New York, and Albany is no different, tax burden is actually beginning to drive real estate values and damage them.
Yes.
And I can see, just looking at the tax rolls, there are people who easily have to be paying more in escrow if they have a mortgage and there's an escrow for taxes than they're paying on the mortgage itself. That's a crazy situation, one I had never seen until I moved to upstate New York in 2005.
Now, I've got a question for the many proponents that want to see this pass, and there were a lot of them at the meeting last night, the school board meeting. The people that want to see them pass, see this pass, don't they understand the ramifications to people on fixed income?
I don't think they care. I don't think they care, Cynthia. I really don't. They have their agenda, and they want to build this palace, it's irresponsible.
Yeah. There is definitely a divide in Albany, some haves and have-nots, and there's no question that I think they don't care. They just want this massive project. You know, let me mention one other thing about the impacts. In Albany, we have both homestead tax rates and non-homestead commercial tax rates. No one reports what the tax burden is going to be on the shop owner, the little retail establishment, or the big businesses. But it's going to be huge. And every time there's a property tax increase, something we don't think about is there's a tax on National Grid right away, our electric system and our underground utilities and so on. That can comprise as much as 20% to 40% of a person's electric bill. So we're going to see our electric bills go up.
It's really
difficult to predict. But this will have a really bad impact on Albany, which still has a struggling economy.
Well, here we have a city with an alleged, it's reported in the media over and over again, a $12 million hole in the budget.
Right.
There's really no revenue. The so-called red light camera boondoggle has been a failure. They haven't even, from what I've heard, they really haven't gotten revenue of any significance from it because they're just paying the outlay cost for construction and installation. So that's been a... in fact, the mayor had to revise her $2 million revenue estimate down by half, and it's way below that now, too. So you've got a lot of gaps in the budget, and they're depending on the state. Now, we'll know more when the governor gives his state of the state address, but he's also combining his budget together. But my doubt is that Albany's not going to get the money because the governor has a long memory. The local people here that run the school district and the political elite, they backed Teachout in last year's Democratic primary. And the governor's not going to forget that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Governor Cuomo was out in Rochester today throwing around the B word, billions of aid to upstate New York, but very unclear exactly where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly has some money to throw around, but will Albany get the $12.5 million that it needs? I don't know. We will see.
Well, there's another possible source for that, and that's why the rezoning is taking place. HUD is going to be giving large grants to municipalities to comply with the HUD plan to change the makeup of single-family residential neighborhoods. And that's what's on the back burner with this whole rezoning project. So the mayor still has another possible source of revenue, and that's going to be the HUD program, federal HUD program.
Now, given the fact that there is a $12 million deficit, you know, when I was talking to some of my friends who are proponents of this, I said, what if this fails? He says, we'll just have another vote. And I'll say, what about a second? He says, we'll have it over and over again until it passes. He says, that's done all the time. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, that whole process should be changed. And what I've proposed is that we pressure Senator Breslin and Assemblywoman Fahey and McDonald to put in the proper legislation to require that school budget fiscal votes occur only on general election dates. And that's when you're going to maximize the turnout, even though the turnouts even in general elections are quite low. This is the reason that the last budget or the last Bond Act proposal failed, because it was scheduled on the general election day, and voters came out. So they've got to get away from this midwinter type of special election where only one polling place per ward is open, because people are creatures of habit, and the old people are not going to go out in the winter. The people that run these school board elections, the fiscal votes and so forth, know that. So that process has to change, and that begins with modifying state law. And the Common Council, all they have to do is send a home rule message supporting that change, a home rule resolution, to the finance committees in the Senate and the Assembly
Hello.
And the state legislature.
I'm here. Bob?
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
No problem.
Bob? Okay.
Well, let me fill in. Well, we got a little technical problem that's happening until Bob joins us again. Maybe he got disconnected
okay.
or something.
No,
when he's back, he can let us know. But
okay.
I have an idea that the state legislators are not going to do this because they're going to resist it. And this idea of moving to November isn't going to happen. So I have a compromise idea. We have presidential primary day, April 19th, and you're going to have both Democratic and Assembly and Republican primaries for
right.
president. Why not just simply, I'm challenging the school board now to simply change the date of their ballot proposition, the $170 million bond act, to April 19th in the spirit of fairness. Because you're going to have a larger turnout of voters, and especially with the interest on the primary, it's probably going to be a larger than normal turnout, and that's going to be a better indication, a fairer indication of how the public really feels on this issue. What do you think of that?
I think it's good. Bob, are you there?
By doing that...
Well,
we'll just
Go
continue
ahead.
Talking. So by doing that, Cynthia... You'll have all the polling places will be open, and there won't be any extra expense because right now for the school board to conduct this February 9th ballot, there's a cost associated with it, and there's also a lot of secrecy associated with it because it's the fox guarding the chicken coop because who's supervising the election? It's really the school district, isn't it? And I think that process has to stop because the Board of Elections that we have in the county should be accountable and responsible for all ballot propositions and elections and counting the votes and certifying the votes and so forth. So that's another improvement that could be made with amending the state law, both education law and election law. So
now,
I've got a
question. When the... When the board voiced their opinion on whether or not to vote for this, a majority of the board members voted for the new taxes, correct?
5 out of 7. One abstained and one voted no. So that was the total of 7 board members. So 5 voted for it. In fact, I would wish that the names of the people would be published so voters could also know who voted for, who voted against, and who ducked.
Now,
abstention is largely ducking.
Now, has it been written who voted for it?
Pardon me, please?
Has it been written in the newspaper who voted for it?
I haven't seen it. If it has, I haven't seen it.
So you don't know who voted for it and who voted against it?
Well,
I do know that
one of the newly elected members, Ellen Roach, voted no, so that was consistent with her pledge while she was running for office. And
right.
then there was one more board member who abstained, which is essentially just ducking the issue.
Okay.
He didn't have the courage to. But I'm sure this information is available, and it should really be publicized. Maybe it has appeared in the paper, and maybe outlets like the Talk 1300 Radio Report, they might look into that.
Okay, so we have... A month to go. It's going to begin February 9th. So we have a month to talk about this issue on Focus on Albany.
Right.
In a couple of days, I'm going to have a proponent of the new budget. So stay tuned for that, and then we can further talk about this issue, because ultimately it's going to affect everybody in this heating and bulking, whether they're a homeowner or a renter, correct?
That's correct, because renters also see the impact in their rental increases, because nobody escapes this, the fiscal accountability for this bond act, for paying for it. So it's not only homeowners, it's businesses. And like Bob mentioned earlier, there were two tiers of tax, one for commercial, one for residential. Well, that was done away with last year. So homeowners already got a spike in their taxes, because the rates are the same now for businesses and homeowners. And homeowners are not making money. We're just simply paying. When we pay our tax bills, we don't have any profit to look for. We can't deduct any losses in the business and so forth, whereas a commercial establishment can do that.
Okay. So, Joe and Bob, let's continue this conversation. I will add other voices onto this issue, and I hope to talk with you again. So you've been listening to Focus on Albany with Joe Sullivan and Bob Port. And if you have any comments or criticisms of this show, please go on Twitter, hashtag Focus on Albany, and tell me what you're thinking. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you for your public service, and thank you, Bob.